Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Natural Resources. This is February 5th, 2015. Today is an informational meeting. Essentially, we're going to have an overview of the governor's recommended budget with Kathleen Connolly and Richard Whitman. But before we do that, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Siebert as he has some announcements.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I just wanted to note that today's materials again are in the OLIS. You have the agenda, and I would point out that there's a co-chair budget framework. We've put a small display that essentially lays out what was in the co-chair's budget framework for natural resources. And I guess I could probably best characterize the initial investments as, going at agency's base budget ability to deal with the programs that they're already responsible for. So they see a lot of things like investments in administration, investments in taking care of revenue problems, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, DOGAMI, investments in the Department of Forestry's administration, as well as IT systems, the Department of Agriculture's laboratory, and their back office functions to ease burden on fee payers. So I guess if I could characterize the co-chair initial investments in their initial framework would be really working at making sure agencies have the resources to take care of the programs they're already responsible for.
Do any committee members have any questions for Mr. Siebert on that? Okay. So at this time, we'll call up Richard Whitman and Kathleen Connolly.
For the record, I'm Kathy Connolly with DAS, Chief Financial Office.
And Co-Chair Rayfield, for the record, Richard Whitman, Governor Kitzhaber's Natural Resource Advisor. Good morning.
Good morning.
Co-Chair Rayfield, if I could begin, I will handle a few of the slides, and then Mr. Whitman will take over. The purpose of this presentation for the committee is to provide a high-level overview of the governor's budget for the natural resource program area. We're going to have a brief discussion of the governor's budget generally, the priorities and 10-year goals that are driving the governor's budget. We're going to then focus on information on projected levels and sources of general fund and lottery fund revenues and program allocation, program level allocation of those funding sources and total funding sources. And then Mr. Whitman will take over to discuss the funding for the natural resource program area in particular and the initiatives, goals, and investments that are in the governor's budget. These are the goals, 10-year goals of the governor's budget that drive the governor's budget. The natural resource program area tracks generally to the healthy environment area, which is to manage Oregon's natural resources to sustain economic, environmental, and human health, and to the economy and jobs area, which is focused on making sure Oregon has a diverse, dynamic economy that drives jobs creation and prosperity for all Oregonians. This budget is about priorities. It's not programs. It's focused on achieving these outcomes over 10 years through strategic spending and investment. And what you will see in the natural resource program area is that this budget contains a continuation of some initiatives that began in the 2013 budget or even earlier. It also has new initiatives that will carry on through later biennia to really be fully achieved. The governor's budget revenue projections are based on the December 2014 revenue forecast, and that projected general fund and lottery fund revenues to grow at approximately 11%, and what that generates is $1.8 billion in general fund and lottery fund resources. The next slide is it's the general fund and lottery fund revenues and expenditures for the governor's budget as a whole. Personal income taxes are obviously the dominant source of that revenue. I did want to draw your attention to the lottery fund revenue, which is very important to the natural resource area because of the Measure 76 lottery funds. So you will see here agencies come in to talk about their use of those lottery funds and how important they are to them. On the other side, the blue side, it's talking about total spending. Money comes in, money goes out. Education, human services, and public safety are obviously the largest shares of that. But next is natural resources. And while that is a fairly small part of the entire budget, the governor has invested substantially in this area. Again, returning to the priorities that he has. Natural resources has a large impact on smaller communities, rural communities, and it's part of his goal to ensure that all Oregonians have sustainable, healthy communities. This is kind of a different view. On the left-hand side is the total funds distribution. What I'd like to point out to you there is that here the natural resources has 3% of the governor's budget. On this side, it's just general fund and lottery fund, and here natural resources has 2% of the governor's budget. And what I want to communicate is that other funds and federal funds are important to the natural resource program area budget. You will, as the agencies come forward, there's going to be fee bills, there's going to be discussions about sources of federal funding, some of which are very stable, some of which are not. And so this is just to highlight that those sources of funding are also important to the natural resource area. And now I would like to turn it over to Mr. Whitman.
Okay, thank you, Kathy. So this slide looks at the difference between 1999-01 actual budget for the natural resource program area in 13-15, this current biennium, in terms of the legislatively approved budget. And you'll notice a couple of things looking at this slide. Number one, there has been a decrease in the proportion of funding to natural resource agencies that stems from the general fund, from 13% down to 9%. At the same time, there's been an increase in funding to the natural resource area from lottery funds. And as Ms. Connolly mentioned, that's primarily a result of the Measure 66, now 76, funding. One aspect of that, which Ms. Connolly also alluded to, is the long-term projections in terms of lottery revenue to the state are essentially flat. So that has implications, particularly for this program area. As we move out on that trajectory, there's going to be an issue of what do we do about the flat trajectory for lottery funds. And that is one of the reasons that the governor in this coming biennium proposed a fairly significant increase in general fund allocation to this program area. Next slide. So the large policy frame for Governor Kitzhaber's budget in the natural resource area stems from the 10-year plan that was prepared 2-3 years ago now, that set out four key goals for the natural resources area: improve air and water quality, conserve and restore natural habitats, reduce exposure to toxins, and build strong, sustainable communities. And as I go through the major parts of the governor's proposal, you'll see how his proposal ties to those goals. The basic strategy is to invest in working lands, working farms, and working forest, to support rural economy and to conserve our environment. Next slide. So Mr. Siebert pointed out, in terms of the co-chair's framework budget, that job one is making sure that we're taking care of the existing programmatic responsibilities for natural resources, and I couldn't agree more. So although I'm going to talk about these initiatives, understand that the governor's proposal also includes substantial investment in maintaining the capacity in natural resource budgets to continue doing what they're already supposed to be doing. So With that said, let me talk about three primary initiative areas, and then I'm going to come back and go through each one of these details. At the end of my presentation, I'm going to come back to some major budget issues that face the natural resource area, and I'm also going to talk a little bit more about the co-chair's framework budget and the governor's budget and similarities and some differences. So, but first to the major initiative areas. So there's a proposed investment of almost $55 million in Oregon's Integrated Water Resources Program. This is an effort that was actually started under Governor Kulongoski with the Integrated Water Resources Strategy, and has been carried forward really for the last 4 years. And I'm going to come back and talk about that in more detail. But the main thrust of this is building the capacity in rural communities for water infrastructure for a whole variety of purposes, including agriculture, which continues to be the number two industry in the state of Oregon, but also for human consumption and also for in-stream needs as well. The second major area of initiative is in the area of water quality, and again I'll talk about this in more detail in a moment, but we have hundreds of millions of dollars being invested to improve water quality in the state of Oregon. We need to be more strategic in how we're using those existing funding streams to make sure that we get the best bang for the buck for that investment, and that's what this particular initiative is about. And then finally, on working farms and forests, you'll see there are a series of initiatives there, including a finance initiative to help keep working farms as working farms and working forest as working forest, as well as support for collaborative forestry projects on federal lands, as well as additional support for our state forest program. So with that, I'm actually going to turn to your handout that you should all have that looks like this, that for those watching is also on OLIS, so you can look at this as I go through. I'm just going to dwell briefly on this first page. I talked about the governor's proposed reinvestment in natural resource area. This chart at the top of the first page lays that out in graphic form and shows that we had a drop-off in general fund investment in this program area from 1999 through the Great Recession period, and these agencies were really struggling. Since that time, there has been reinvestment in this biennium, and there's a proposed significant additional reinvestment in this program area for the coming biennium. Again, largely to keep existing programs going, and to respond to challenges in terms of declining or flat lottery revenue and declining or flat federal fund and other fund revenue. Okay, so I actually want to turn to the third page now, which looks like this, which is titled at the top, Initiative Number One, Working Forest and Farms. So for each of these initiative areas, we put a graphic or a table at the beginning that explains some of the policy reason why there's a proposed initiative in this program area. And so I'm going to dwell just briefly on each of these. This first table is a comparison of Washington and Oregon over the last 20 plus years in terms of how lands have shifted between uses. And what you'll see right at the top there in terms of wildland forest is that the state of Washington has lost 235,000 acres of forest land to other uses over the last 20 years, while the state of Oregon has lost, during the same period, about 10% of that amount, 27,000 acres. That is largely the result of our land use system. Our land use system has done a great job of keeping our forest lands and our ag lands as forest and ag lands. And you can go on down the chart and see similar numbers. This has important revenue cost policy implications. Also, you're going to hear, as we work through budgets in this session, about the cost of the wildland fire program at the Department of Forestry. The major cost driver for the FIRE program is dwellings in the wildland-urban interface. And so the fact that we have kept the number of dwellings in that interface area down in comparison to the state of Washington means A, we're protecting human safety, and B, it means we have reduced the cost for our wildland fire program. So what is the problem with working lands then if our land use system has done such a great job? Well, even though we have maintained lands in those uses generally, we are seeing shifts in ownership of those lands and how those lands are managed. If you read stories about the state of Montana or other states in the West, you know that our forest lands are increasingly going into investment funds of various types that are managed really for return on, purely for return on investment, not necessarily as an integrated company thinking about mills, thinking about all aspects of the forest products industry. Similarly, in agriculture, most of our farmers are getting on in age, like me, and they we're looking at a significant generational turnover in our farms. And we are also starting to see some of the same ownership patterns in our farms as well, with farms being bought from by out-of-state purchasers or by investment firms. So there is concern about tools to make sure that we're continuing to use those lands in ways that create jobs for our rural communities and that also provide important environmental benefits for all Oregonians. So that's what this program is about. And it consists of the following major parts. First of all, as I mentioned, a finance initiative that primarily consists of proposals for bond funding for grant program and loan and loan guarantee programs. I want to be clear, that belongs in the Capital Construction Subcommittee of Ways and Means. That's where those decisions will be made. There are some costs associated with that program that are before this committee in terms of debt service, in terms of administration of the program, but most of the decision making is really around bond funding. Secondly, and I'm not going to go through this in detail. We'll go through this in more detail as individual agency budgets come back before you. But there's a significant investment of funds in our state forest program, recognizing that our state forest program is not on a sustainable path in terms of its cost and revenue trajectories. And then in addition, there is also a significant investment in the state sage-grouse plan, which is a cooperative effort from the Oregon cattlemen, Eastern Oregon counties, the state, and many other partners to avoid what we've seen in Western Oregon with the spotted owl listing, which could occur if we are not active working on this issue in Eastern Oregon where we have sage-grouse habitat. So those are the major components of the Working Forest and Farms Initiative. And again, as individual agency budgets come back before you, we and the agencies will be pointing out how these things link together. On the next page, you see all that laid out in table form in terms of the agency packages, the amount, the positions, and the funding source. And that's true for each of these initiatives. We put that information together for you so you can see how it ties together. I next want to move on to the Clean Water Partnership, which is on the next page. It has the graph that looks like this. This is a graph that shows trends in our overall statewide water quality over the last 20 years. The good news is we've gone from about 27% of our waters in good to excellent condition to about 50% in good to excellent condition. The bad news is we're flat for the last 5-7 years in terms of trends. The governor's objective in this area is to start bending that curve back so we start to make progress again in improving water quality around the state. And that's really the focus of this initiative. As I mentioned, we, and here it's the broad we, I'm including the federal government and the private sector, including industry, are investing hundreds of millions of dollars in water quality every year. But we do not have the tools in place to identify exactly where the key investments are needed to move that line back up toward a positive trajectory. And we don't have the tools in place so that we know if we invest this amount of money for this type of program, what's the result going to be. So the basic focus of this package is around getting the tools to support smarter investments of existing funding streams, both federal, from NRCS, from Farm Services Agency, from EPA, and state, from DEQ, from OEB, from the forest industry, from our farmers also, all of those pieces. Okay. And again, on the next page, you'll see that there are the specifics about the particular packages, what agency budget it resides in, and the positions. And again, I'm not going to take the time today to go through those in detail. The third initiative is the Integrated Water Resources Program. It starts with the page with the two maps on it. And the reason for the two maps is the map on the left, which I know you can't read, but you can see the colors. The purple on that map is the area of the state where new water rights, surface water rights, can be obtained in the month of July. What this indicates is we are already out of water for new uses in terms of surface water for most parts of the state, except for some areas of the Willamette Basin and a few areas on the coast. Map on the right shows information for the same issue, but in the month of January. So what this is saying is we have a lot of precipitation and water during the winter, which we see today and we all know about being Oregonians. Our problem is a timing problem in terms of low flows during the summer. This is also driven by our increasing temperatures and the loss of snowpack in our Cascade Mountains. And this year, we're down in the low teens already for our snowpack in the Cascades. That has significant ramifications for all sorts of things, including agriculture, including our municipalities, including our fisheries, really across the board. We need to get on this issue, and we need to get on it seriously. Our neighbor to the north, Washington, is investing hundreds of millions of dollars in putting together multi-purpose water resources projects that help fisheries, but also help cities, also help agriculture. Our state to the south, California, spends billions of dollars on these programs. Oregon is behind its neighbors, and we can't afford to continue that given the situation that we're seeing develop with increasing temperatures in particular. So the governor has proposed a pretty significant investment in terms of, again, bond funding. Again, this is a capital construction issue primarily, but there are general fund and lottery fund aspects of this program that are under the jurisdiction of this committee as well. So the basic thrust of this package is to work with our communities to help them plan, to identify what the top needs are for water projects, and then to help them evaluate the feasibility of moving specific projects forward, and then finally to help finance those. In the state, we do not have enough money in the state to be the primary source of financing these projects, but we can leverage federal dollars, and we believe we can leverage private dollars. So this also includes aspects of putting together a program to leverage other resources as well. And then the final initiative, which actually didn't appear on the slide, but it is an important fourth initiative, is really in the area of natural resource agency alignment and coordination. We have 14 natural resource agencies with a whole host of regulatory programs, and there is I'll be the first to say there is some overlap between those programs, and there is a need to make sure we don't have agencies giving mixed signals to the private sector, that we are being clear with the private sector about what the state does and does not want to see. So the purpose of this fourth initiative is to put together a small but highly skilled team that has that responsibility and authority to work with the natural resource agencies on both policy making issues and specific regulatory situations where they're important to a region or a state, and to tie this also to the regional solutions program. So where we have priorities being developed by our regional solutions teams that need, again, consistent guidance from policymakers in the state to provide that guidance as well. So this is the fourth area of initiative. I know Senator Dembrough has a natural resource agency consolidation bill. We have some other legislation that's related to some of these concepts. We're looking forward to having a discussion about how do we do a better job of being more efficient and coordinated among these agencies. This is a you could call it a natural resource agency consolidation light proposal. It's a first step toward accomplishing some of those same outcomes that I think Senator Dembrough is interested in. So with that, I'm done with going through the handout. Let me quickly come back, if I could, to the overhead presentation. So next slide, please. I want to talk briefly about major budget issues that we face putting together the governor's recommended and that you're going to face also as you work through the legislative budget. Mr. Siebert mentioned the issue with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. We have issues both with the Department of Fish and Wildlife itself and also with Oregon State Police Fish and Wildlife Division. There are significant shortfalls in both program areas, largely driven by decline in fee revenue, but also to some degree decline in federal funds for these programs as well. The governor's budget proposes a pretty significant investment of general fund dollars into fish and wildlife, and basically takes a share the pain strategy, if you will, to fill that hole with roughly equivalent general fund increase, fee increase, and program reductions. That was the basic philosophy that we took in approaching that issue. There also are issues with the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, and they're going to be before you early next week. I'll talk about those more specifically then. Just an early signal on this, the governor had proposed a one-year budget for that agency. We know that the co-chairs would like to see this agency have a two-year budget, and I'm just going to say right now for everybody, we're fine with that. Our issue is we need to have a serious conversation about the stability of funding for this agency long-term and what the business model is. It doesn't matter whether it's a one-year budget or a two-year budget, so I'll talk about that more next week. And then finally, I think most of you are aware we've had significant wildfire cost in this state. Particularly in the last biennium, where we've had to come back to the emergency board and get general fund appropriations for paying for the cost of wildfire. Doug Decker, the director of the Department of Forestry, is over in London right now talking with Lloyd's of London to try to maintain the insurance policy that is a key part of how we pay for our wildfire costs. We don't know if he's going to be successful or not. Even if he is successful, we are expecting there is going to be a significant increase in the cost of that policy. So that's just another long-term major budget issue to anticipate. Finally, in terms of similarities between the co-chair's framework and the governor's budget and differences, there is somewhat less of allocation of general fund and lottery fund in the co-chair's framework, it appears, to this program area. And then in terms of similarities, there appears to be investment in the co-chair's framework to address the Department of Fish and Wildlife issue, to also address the need for general fund dollars to deal with some of our water quality issues, which I talked about in the Clean Water Partnership Initiative. And then investment in needed infrastructure and capacity at the Oregon Department of Agriculture and the Oregon Department of Forestry, which we agree with. Next slide. And then finally, the areas of difference. Again, this is not an issue for this sub, but it could have some effect on this sub long term, is how to deal with the Oregon State Police Fish and Wildlife Division shortfall. That is in the public safety sub, we know that. And we'll be having discussions in that subcommittee about that issue. Funding of the Working Farm and Forest Initiative, it doesn't appear that most of the elements of that initiative are funded in the co-chair's framework, but again, most of the funding there is in terms of bond funding that would be a subject for the Capital Construction Committee. And then similarly for the Integrated Water Resources Program, it's not clear that there's funding there for that program as well. So we'll be, as agency budgets come before you, we'll be talking more specifically about those pieces. And with that, that's my overview of the budgets for the natural resource program area. I would be very happy to try and answer any questions that members might have.
Yes, Senator Hensel.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Richard, you're going to get asked this question sometime, probably have. I would just, where in the budget are the statewides, and at what level were they? What's the situation there with the recommendations?
So Co-Chair Rayfield and Senator Hansel, we know, we're well aware of this issue. We've seen the letter that has been put together by the statewides with, or on behalf of the statewides, I should say. The development of the governor's budget in the education area began with flat funding of all of the elements of that program area. And frankly, there was significant discussion about flat funding of the statewides. We brought the statewides in to meet with the governor's office team and some agency directors to talk about their issues and their relation to natural resource agencies. And as a result of that discussion, the governor proposed actually roughly a 3% increase in the budgets for those statewides. So there was significant attention paid to this issue in the preparation of the governor's budget, and we were at least somewhat successful in getting at least some additional resources to the statewides. So this is an issue that's going to also come up in, I believe, the education sub. And again, it has some relation to this subcommittee because, I'll be the first to say, the School of Extension, the School of Ag, School of Forestry all play very important roles in implementation of natural resource programs at the state level. Extension, really in particular, is a key player in implementation of work on sage grouse, on water quality, a whole variety of things. So that's the answer to your question is it was seriously considered, and I think I would say that they made out better than they have in the past, but not as well as they would have liked to.
Follow up? In the co-chair's budget, do they keep the 3% in? Do we know that? Co-chair's suggestion.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hansel, I believe so. I'd have to check. That the education area is one place where there actually were some numbers put into the co-chair framework. A lot of that, and I'm if I'm remembering correctly, that's about right. And just for clarification, the statewide refers to the statewide public service programs at Oregon State University, which is part of the public university budgets. That's the Agriculture Experiment Station, Extension Service, and the Forest Research Lab. And they total approximately about $100 million of general fund, if I remember correctly, give or take. Some of those programs, most all of them, especially the Experiment Station and the Forest Research Lab, are very integrated in the education component of Oregon State University. So there's kind of both pieces.
Thank you.
Senator Denbrough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just following up on that, I do think that we might as well go ahead and focus on the statewides, because we will eventually. And so we might as well plan for an increase straight out. I just remember just looking at Representative Clem, we had a Frontier Summit this summer where a number of controversial proposals were put forward, you know, regarding how do we reinvigorate our frontier economy. And the one area, I think, where there was universal consensus was we need to maintain and actually extend actually in some ways reinvigorate our extension services to apply to new economies and new techniques. I think that that is an important point. You know, one of the themes that you mentioned that's running through the proposals is reinvigorating rural economies, investing in rural economies. And I will say, when I had a constituent coffee a couple of months ago, and Senator Hansel came together with some people from Eastern Oregon, and we were reminded by some of my constituents that ag extension is not just a rural issue, that people in the urban and suburban areas also really rely on the many of the services that they do. So if we're looking for investments that unite all of Oregon, I think that's an important one.
Representative Heck.
Thank you, Chair. In follow-up a little bit to that, I've got a question in regards to the Working Farm and Forest Initiative. You did not have a dollar amount on your slide as far as the investment. Can you tell us the dollar amount that you're planning to invest in that? And also, my understanding is that you have been working closely with some of our stakeholders, the Farm Bureau, Cattlemen's Association, and some of the forestry groups. And I don't know if this is a question specifically for you or if you can answer this for us, but do you have support of those groups? I believe they're going to be key in making sure that this initiative is successful. Do you plan to continue working with those groups? I've asked some questions of the governor's office about how this will be implemented, how we're going to be successful in that in regards to the rollout, how the rules and the policies are going to work. You know, it's one thing to put money out there, and we certainly want to see our economy grow not only in the rural areas but also in urban. And, past has shown you can't just throw money at something, but we've also got to have some folks that are, I believe, that are on the ground working that have been successful that could possibly mentor these groups, or, you know, there's a lot of different ways that we can look at that. But I think it's really important to not just have state agencies involved in how this is going to roll out, but also having some stakeholders and some folks that are out there doing it and have been successful. So my question to you is, what's the dollar amount going to be, and what is the commitment going to be to work with some of these stakeholders and these folks to make sure that this program's successful?
Co-Chair Rayfield, Representative Hack, excellent questions on the dollar amount. The total dollar amount for the Working Farm and Forest package is $45.6 million. Of that, about $30 million is in bond financing. And that $30 million in bond financing breaks down as follows. There is $15 million for a grant program. And let's see, there is, $5 million for a loan guarantee program and $10 million for a revolving loan fund program. And I'd be happy to, at the appropriate time, go in detail about how each of those is targeted, but that's the finance part of it. In addition to that, there's an investment of about $4.5 million in the sage-grouse effort. That's a piece of that. And let's see other major components. There's an investment of about $6 million in the Federal Forest Collaborative piece and about $2.8 million in the state forest support. So again, as each of these packages comes before you, we can go into detail. But I think your second question was really primarily about the finance initiative portion of this. And as I think you know, Tom Tuckman, the governor's forest policy advisor, has been working with a broad group of stakeholders, including both our agricultural and forest industry sectors, as well as conservation interest, on the policy bill related to this, which, if my memory serves, is Senate Bill 205. Did I get that right? We'll confirm that with you. But they have been continuing to meet and will continue to meet. I can't tell you today whether we will ultimately have the support of all the groups, but I can tell you that we will keep working with all the groups to do everything we can to make sure this is a collaborative process that has strong support from all sectors, conservation and ag and forest and others. I agree with you. If this is going to be successful, we're going to need that sort of broad support. And then finally, your question about implementation. Currently, the way this is set up in the policy bill is that the grant program would be operated by the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, which, of course, has lots of experience already operating similar programs under Measure 76. The loan and loan guarantee programs would be operated by Business Oregon, which has experience with debt programs supported for economic development purposes. So that was the thinking behind that. We believed in terms of the implementation, there would also have to be strong participation from our districts, soil and water conservation districts, probably from Ag Extension, and others who are the people on the ground who know where the opportunities are and also where the needs are in terms of key parts of the agricultural infrastructure to try to maintain, which is part of the purpose here, or among our forest land owners. What are those key areas where we're at risk of losing something?
Have you considered working with some of our successful timber owners and farmers? You know, we talk about the importance of bringing in entrepreneurs and new folks into the industry, and you yourself have even said, you know, we've got a lot of older farmers who are aging out. Have you considered the fact that maybe it's time to bring some of those folks in and work with these, you know, young folks coming into it, whether that be a mentorship or something to come alongside? Obviously, you know, if they've made it through the recession, they're doing something right. The successful ones that are doing very well, I don't know what that would look like, but there's something to be said for, you know, either a lot of them are coming in just simply because they have a family business and that's their way in. But if we really want to bring in new business and new entrepreneurs into the industry, there may be something to be said about some sort of an incentive for them to also work with those that have been there, done that, and have done it well. Not just a state agency, but a true business that is an Oregon-based company that's done it well.
Yeah. So Co-Chair Rayfield, Representative Hack, I'd be happy to follow up with you and talk some more about this. There would be two stages to this. There's the work on the legislation, which is the broad outlines of the program, and there will need to be a rule process also working out the details, and that's where I think you would want some real farmers,
yes,
and some real foresters there to help provide reality to that process. Thank you.
Do you have any other questions? Yes, Senator
Deborah. Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Since we're looking at sort of big picture things today, Richard, you know, you had mentioned the challenges that we're already anticipating because of the small snowpack, and, you know, this is shaping up to be another warm year. What, aside from the danger of another tough forest fire season, what do we have to watch out for coming this summer and into the fall?
Co-Chair Rayfield and Senator Dembro, I think the main risk in terms of continued lack of snowfall, so actually the precipitation levels have been fairly close to normal. So what you're going to see is, as far as spring and first half of summer, I think we're going to be probably okay, generally. And then things are going to dry out really fast. And that's where I think we'll need to watch out both for, again, another bad potentially wildfire season, both in terms of our forest lands and in terms of our rangelands. And then based on the experience from the last several years where we've had, I think in 2014, we had 7 or 8 counties with drought declarations. There are likely to be drought declarations in many counties again. And in terms of irrigated agriculture, a couple of things. One, what the drought does is it basically will shut some people down early, and for others it will result in a shift to groundwater. And what we are seeing in terms of the shift to groundwater in places like the Klamath Basin, but also out in the Malheur area, is one of the tools we have in the state is drought wells, so we can allow some additional groundwater pumping during these periods. But we are starting to see some significant declines in groundwater levels that is causing concern for other users. So, for instance, in Klamath and Malheur, if groundwater levels drop too much, you're going to see domestic wells start to dry up, and then we'll have problems with getting water to those domestic well users. You'll see some of the ag users that have shallow wells, again, have to deepen their wells. And you'll see some curtailment in agricultural production. I could go on the ag piece, but those are probably the major impacts. For our municipalities, again, for municipalities, particularly in the Willamette Valley, but also to some degree in the Rogue and Umpqua, lack of snowpack is going to probably mean some significant municipal shortages and need for municipal conservation during the summer period. So those are probably the most immediate impacts that I think we can expect if this trend doesn't change quickly. We do have a major storm coming in on the southern part of the state, but it's pretty warm. So we'll see. We're extremely concerned right now.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, just a comment.
Yeah, Senator Hetzel.
As a senator from a 100% rural district, I really appreciate the governor's emphasis on rural economies and working together to build that part of the state. And I just want to express my appreciation. Thank you.
Co-Chair Rayfield, Senator Hansel. You're very welcome. The governor really is acutely aware of the lagging economy in many parts of our state, particularly rural areas, and it's a major concern of his in terms of the prosperity of our state. Thank you.
Mr. Siebert, did you have a comment?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I just want to comment briefly on the bonding process that was alluded to. There is a capital construction subcommittee that looks at all the bonding and capital construction requests that are before the legislature, but that doesn't mean that they're not interested in the, the input from this subcommittee on the worthiness of the program. And also, we should know that while that subcommittee decides the projects, ultimately the debt service is paid out of the budgets for the agencies that are in front of this subcommittee. So, for example, I didn't see any debt service in the $30 million for the working farms and family, so that probably assumes a late biennium sale, maybe. But if there is debt service, for example, in one of the other programs for the integrated water resource strategy, then they put for an early sale and include that debt service right in the budget. But it's not unusual for the legislature to approve projects for late sales in the biennium where we don't include any debt service for this biennium, but you have to start paying debt service the next biennium.
Yes, Ms. Connelly.
Co-Chair Rayfield, Mr. Siebert is exactly right in the Working Farms and Forests. We are anticipating a late sale, and so debt service would kick in the 17-19 budget.
Any other questions? All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Whitman. Thank you, Ms. Connelly. We appreciate the effort you put into the presentation today.
Mr. Chair, I just might note that you have Dogami starting on Monday and Tuesday next week, followed by the Marine Board on Wednesday and Land Use Board of Appeals on Thursday.
Thank you, Mr. Siebert. Just a quick note. I was born in a military family, so I generally start promptly at 8:30. So I apologize if you guys step in a little late with other things. Just wanted to give you a little heads up that I start, you know, at 8:30.
At 8:30.
Yes, exactly. Thank you very much. Yeah. As my father would remind me. The other thing that I talked with.
Are you looking at the senators? You know, it's a long way. We have a long way to travel to get over here.
I'm just saying we can replay the videotape. So. I had also talked with Co-Chair Devlin about how we're going to go through the process, and one of the suggestions that we had is there's a lot of different interests on this panel and to some of the different agencies, and some of the agencies you might have a great interest and others you may not be so interested in. What we would like to do is encourage folks either to work together on a specific agency or several agencies and dig down on the budget and kind of be an expert in that area. Obviously, Co-Chair Devlin and myself will be working through all the budgets, but we'd like to be able to have another set of critical eyes on this subcommittee to be able to confer with. So if you are interested in doing that, please let me know. I'll let Co-Chair Devlin know which committees you'd like to work on, so that way we know who to consult with as we're going through the process. With that, is there anything else for the good of the order? All right, we'll adjourn the meeting.
Thank you.
All right, we'll adjourn the meeting.
Thank you.